scrap, 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 scrap.
Mike?
I'm mean, I'm fierce, I'm mad, I'm rude, I got that pro fighter attitude. I'm in the octagon with the podcast on, let's talk about it on Scraptitude. You know I've been the best, grab my belt and begin to flex so wild I might hit the ref. We got the winner circle segments and the 2-on-5 takeaways with Tim and Jeff, so just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night, so you know what we have to do, whether a power punch or a grapple move. You know we got you covered on Scraptitude, so just kick back, grab a brew, it's fight night, so you know what we have to do, whether a power punch or a grapple move. You know we got you covered on Scraptitude, yeah.
Scrap, 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 scrap,
yeah.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Tim Talk 276, brought to you by the Scraptitude Podcast Network. This is Timothy Lewis coming at you, and today we are talking UFC 276. Each episode, we pick up new listeners, and therefore I feel inclined to initiate the uninformed. This podcast takes three key points of reference: the odds makers, the film, and the data. What separates us from other popular MMA betting podcasts is the state-of-the-art Scraptitude database, a full-fledged, unique data set with the most predictive analytics in the business. We leverage this information and cross-reference it with the odds makers and my own experience watching the sport, a decade plus of experience, to give you the greatest sense of perspective you can have to make the most informed wagers come fight night. So join me as we gauge probabilities, uncover patterns, and balance the quantitative and the qualitative. But first, we must review the previous card, Tim Talk 275.
And you know this, man!
Last week, we cooled off a little bit, and quite frankly, that was to be expected. I told you as much. The success rate was unsustainable. But even still, this gives us opportunities to reflect on the areas where we came up short and better assess these upcoming fights. Of the five bouts analyzed on UFC 275 for Tim Talk 275, we got three out of five bouts correct in terms of winners and losers, which of course is below the lofty aspirations of this podcast. But where we really fell short was in terms of outcome-specific predictions. Jake Matthews would go on to knock out Andre Filo instead of that one going to a decision like his previous three victories had. Jiří Prochazka ended up notching an unexpected submission victory in the fifth round against Glover Teixeira in an all-time classic. And the outcome-specific prediction that we did get correct, that is Valentina Shevchenko with the decision victory against Tyler Santos, didn't give us the return that we might want from an outcome-specific bet at just plus 100. And that's why I'm going to put a greater emphasis on mining value and giving a range of outcomes instead of just sending us headfirst into one specific prediction, because the range of outcomes can vary from fight to fight. One fighter may have an overwhelming likelihood to win by knockout, whereas another might have near equal outcomes for knockout, submission, and decision. These are things that we have to factor in. We can't get too glued to one possibility. And at times, instead of chasing strictly plus money, we need to reel in the ambition and make winning plays. So I've gone a step further in this episode in terms of odds aggregation and proposing the said range of outcomes in an effort to give you the best possible product. So without further ado, let's reveal the six fights that I have chosen to cover on Tim Talk 276.
Yo, yeah.
The first bout on the ledger is Brad Tavares versus South Africa's Dricus du Plessis. Those familiar with the podcast know that we have something of a relationship with du Plessis through our main man, Dylan Lowe. Shout out my guy. If you're ever trying to stand and bang on UFC 4, I'll hit you with my gamer tag. You can catch these hands.
Oh, don't be scared, homie.
But back to the bout at hand, we have the savvy veteran Brad Tavares at 34 years old taking on the surging prospect coming off back-to-back knockouts in du Plessis. Currently, the odds makers have du Plessis a minus 148 favorite to the plus 121 of Brad Tavares. That converts to a 59.7% likelihood of victory for du Plessis to the 45.2% for Tavares. Meanwhile, Beta 1, the equation that uses a combination of Scraptitude data points suggests that Brad Tavares and all of his UFC experience should be the favorite, listing him at a 71% likelihood of victory to the 29% of Duplessis. And I love when these frames of reference collide. It makes the sport so much more interesting knowing that we have these varying avenues of perspective. And let's be real, if this was a game simply of the numbers, it wouldn't be nearly as fascinating as it is. So we get to take the perspective of the film, what we see from these fighters with our own eyeballs, and apply it to understand the discrepancy to these two points of reference. Tavares has been rock solid for a long time, kicking around in that 10 to 15 range of the UFC middleweight division. With a solid 76% win rate and a mirroring opponent win rate, Tavares is a respected veteran and a respectable challenge for Dricus du Plessis. I believe there's a dichotomy that defines this fight. We have the athleticism and lethality of du Plessis against the superior experience and strength of schedule of Tavares. From my perspective, we have two opposite trajectories here. We have Tavares at 34 years old on the downswing of his career. He has surrendered knockout losses to Edmin Shahbazyan, Robert Whittaker, and Tim Boach. At this point, he isn't only exiting the age apex, but he's also plateaued in terms of the caliber of talent he's shown that he can beat. Du Plessis, meanwhile, has responded to the rise in competition to thunderous results after blasting Marcus Perez and Trevin Giles out of the water. To me, the 100% finish rate combined with the athleticism of du Plessis speaks volumes. I believe Tavares is overmatched here, and we get the third straight UFC finish from Dricus du Plessis. I have him taking this one inside the distance, which I feel good about at plus 160. However, I also see him as a big enough favorite, both due to his superior grappling acumen and his overall momentum, that I can justify a bet on the money line. It might not be plus money, but I believe it's a surefire win.
Yo, yeah.
Next up, we have a bout that I am particularly excited for, and that is Jalen Turner, the Tarantula, taking on New Zealand's Brad Riddell. Currently, the odds makers are favoring Jalen Turner at minus 151 to the plus 124 of Brad Riddell. In terms of percent likelihoods, that is 60.2% likelihood of victory for Turner to the 44.6% likelihood of Riddell. To the contrary, Beta 1 has Brad Riddell at a 53% likelihood of victory to the 47% of Jalen Turner. But I cannot emphasize how close their numbers added up in those equations. That gap of 6%, man, it's almost negligible. They are neck and neck in terms of their aggregate data in the Beta 1 equation. Both these men are in the prime of their careers, with Jalen Turner at 27 years old to the 30-year-old Riddell. However, there's one significant discrepancy between the two of them. Riddell is 5'7", and Jalen Turner is 6'3". Now, height isn't everything, but Turner did compete at welterweight formerly, and to me, that means something. He is going to be the bigger, longer, taller, and perhaps stronger fighter on fight night. And for this one, I believe the fans are in for a treat as long as it lasts, because despite the fact that the two have shown wrinkles to their game, the ability to mix things up with the takedown, they prefer to strike, and that's where this one is going to take place. Riddell is a hard-nosed and experienced kickboxer who has had some truly spectacular bouts against Rafael Fiziev and Drew Dober. But this time, Riddell will not be facing a stocky spark plug or a rock'em sock'em robot. He will be in there with a rangy sniper. And at the risk of giving my position away too early, I am sick and tired of counting out Jalen Turner. At a certain point, we have to throw out early metrics from their career and accept the fighter that has arrived before us today. The paramount example of this is the lightweight champion, Charles Oliveira. Half of his career, about a 500 fighter, known for quitting. The second half of his career, an undeniable winner with an indomitable spirit. Sweat equity is the name of the game, and at 17 professional fights, I think that Jalen Turner has figured it out. But it would be unfair to discount Brad Riddell. This man has never sniffed an easy fight. with an average opponent wins of 9.91 and an opponent win rate of 73.91. Sure, you could say, Tim, those things you're talking about, they're not stellar numbers. They're more middle of the pack, but they do supersede the statistics of Jalen Turner, who has a 70.63% opponent win percentage and a 6.64 average opponent wins. But at the end of the day, Brad Riddell is going to have to deal with an unorthodox opponent, literally. Jalen Turner is a southpaw. And to couple that with his physical attributes, this is a unique problem to solve that Riddell has not faced in his mixed martial arts career. Just like the previous bout with Dricus du Plessis, I like Jalen Turner outright, but I also love him and his 100% finish rate to capture this one inside the distance. You can notch that at plus 160, just like the prior fight again. And for your edification, both of these odds can be found on MyBookie.
Yo, yeah.
The third bout I'll be covering is Pedro Munhoz versus Sugar Sean O'Malley. And I have to say, this is some absolutely delightful matchmaking. But before we get into the matchup dynamics, let's look at the odds. Currently, Sean O'Malley is an aggregate favorite of minus 309. That is a 75.6% likelihood of victory. Pedro Munhoz, meanwhile, is a plus 243, or a 29.2% likelihood of victory. Beta 1 flip-flops things even more extremely. Pedro Munhoz is an 83% favorite, according to the numbers, to the 17% likelihood of victory for Sugar Sean. To explain the discrepancy when it comes to the Beta 1 equation, this does not factor in momentum, and it heavily weighs experience and the quality of that experience. As we know, Pedro Munhoz, this guy is a gladiator. I mean, Rob Font, Jose Aldo, Jimmy Rivera, Cody Garbrandt, Frankie Edgar. This man ducks nobody. And that's substantiated by his career opponent win rate of 80%. And nobody's doubting that he's faced better guys than Sean O'Malley has. To me, it's just something to think about in the context of Sean O'Malley's favoritism per the odds makers. As we know, Sean O'Malley does not have the strongest strength of schedule, and when he did step up in competition to face Chito Vera, we all saw what happened.
To this day!
But it's ludicrous not to acknowledge that O'Malley is a talented fighter, he's on a win streak, and he is ready to once again climb the mountain. Pedro Munhoz, meanwhile, has lost 4 of 5, and momentum is everything in a sport like this. Confidence is everything. Now, here's where I find the stylistic matchup to be interesting. Sean O'Malley's ultimate undoing was the leg kicks of Chito Vera. And now he's facing one of the most ferocious leg kickers in the sport. I mean, goddamn, I swear, Pedro Munhoz's bones are made out of something different from you and I. On the flip side, many of Munhoz's defeats recently have come against opponents that were able to outmove him. Frankie Edgar was able to circle the perimeter and pick his shots. Dominic Cruz, despite facing some adversity, was able to do the same. Sean O'Malley is rangy, he's quick, and he moves very well. So therein lies the crux of this debate. Will it be the punishing physicality of Pedro Munhoz or the slickness of Sean O'Malley that wins out in the end? Both guys have an avenue towards victory. And from my perspective, despite the differential in momentum, Pedro Munhoz is far too counted out by the odds makers. Be that as it may, this is probably the most friendly stylistic matchup to get Sean O'Malley a number next to his name in the bantamweight division. The slow-footed 35-year-old Munhoz is not a knockout artist, and he's not much of a takedown threat, landing just 0.19 per round. O'Malley may have to demonstrate a baseline level of toughness that we aren't sure he has, but if he's able to do that, the fight should be his. Right now, I'm not loving wagers on O'Malley as a minus 310, but I do see some value in that plus 170 by decision you can notch in on FanDuel right now. After all, Pedro Munhoz has never been finished in his career, so if you believe in O'Malley, you think he's going to get it done, that's the wager I'd suggest locking in.
Yo, yeah.
fourth on the docket is about that captures the imagination. That is the vibrant personality known as Sean Strickland against Potan Alex Pereira. Currently, the odds are as follows. Sean Strickland is an aggregate minus 114 to the minus 111 of Pereira. In terms of percentages, that works out to a 53.3% likelihood of victory for Strickland and a 52.6% likelihood for Pereira. Point being, the odds makers are not trying to get burned on this fight, and they really don't know which way it's going to go. Beta 1, not so indecisive, believing that Sean Strickland has this one in the bag, 100% chance of victory. As I mentioned on previous episodes, fights like this kind of break the algorithm because Alex Pereira, despite his massive wealth of kickboxing experience, is still an amateur. Well, he's a professional technically, but he's still kind of a novice in terms of mixed martial arts compared to the very experienced Sean Strickland. And experience as well as statistical proficiency are valued in the Beta 1 algorithm. Alex Pereira just hasn't had the chance to accumulate those numbers in the context of mixed martial arts. I think one thing that'll shock people is the size differential of the two competitors come weigh-ins. Pereira is 6'4", and in pictures next to Glover Teixeira, a large light heavyweight in his own right, Potan looks fucking massive. Strickland, meanwhile, is a former welterweight. He's not one of the bigger guys in this division, and that's emphasized by his lacking physique. However, Strickland makes up for this with his relatively conservative method of fighting, along with his undeniable motor. The man never stops working inside the cage. The main issue for Strickland is that he has not shown to be a notably versatile mixed martial artist. He averages only 0.38 takedowns per round, and Potan, while he's been taken down twice in each of his last two fights, has not been grounded for a prolonged period of time. And it's quite possible that Strickland trying to make this a more dynamic fight actually works against what has made him so successful, which is operating behind that jab and closing all windows and doors when it comes to openings for his opponents to exploit. For me, the size-adjusted athleticism of Pereira is hard to resist in a matchup that is ostensibly favorable. He's going to be taking on somebody that is going to implement a fundamentally sound boxing-oriented approach. And truth be told, with all of his kickboxing experience, if Potan cannot navigate his way around the jab of a shorter fighter with a shorter reach, then he has no ceiling inside of this sport. Me personally, after some deliberation, because just a few days ago, I wasn't sure. Check out Shavkat's Trouser Snake, the last episode Jeffrey and I recorded. I didn't know where I was going to go here, but the more that I think about it, the more I'm sold on Pereira at a minimum being able to land the impact strikes that notch him a decision. But in terms of outcome-specific predictions, I do believe a knockout is more likely, which can be notched at plus 155 on FanDuel. But again, just because Pereira isn't at plus money on the money line doesn't mean you shouldn't bet him. I think that's what I'm going to do here. I'm taking Pereira outright.
Yo, yeah.
The co-main event of the evening between Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway has been a painstaking bout for me to break down. There's just so many narratives, so many avenues for interpretation that it is difficult to separate the white noise from the heartbeat of this fight. Currently, the odds are as follows. Alexander Volkanovski is a minus 205 favorite to the plus 166 of Max Holloway. In regards to percentages, that converts to a 67.2% likelihood of victory to the 37.6% likelihood of Max Holloway. Beta 1 contradicts this, suggesting that Max Holloway is actually the more likely to win the bout, with a 55% likelihood of victory to the 45% likelihood of Alexander Volkanovski. And to me, that is fascinating. Because Alexander Volkanovski has a stellar statistical profile, but Max Holloway does as well, and the numbers are very close, albeit in different ways. But when we boil it all down in the aggregation known as beta 1, the numbers ever so slightly favor Max Holloway. Knowing how beta 1 is constructed, I believe that this is because of the outrageous strength of schedule, specifically the average opponent wins of Max Holloway. This guy has a staggering resume with 25 fights happening inside the hallowed UFC octagon. But where Max Holloway has been tempered, Alexander Volkanovski has thrived, accumulating a 100% win rate through his 11 UFC contests. And for Volk, the strength of schedule is no slouch in his own right, with wins over Max Holloway times 2, Jose Aldo, Brian Ortega, Korean Zombie, Chad Mendes, all staples, past, present, and maybe even the future of this featherweight division. Now, where the odds makers come from is somewhat obvious. Volkanovski has won 2 out of 2 fights against Max Holloway, and in doing so has arguably won, and by arguably, by the judge's merit, has captured 8 of the 10 rounds that they've shared together. So if you're doing a rudimentary equation, well, if there's an 80% likelihood that Volkanovski is going to win any given round, and we believe this fight is likely to go to a decision based on the toughness and durability of the respective competitors, then there's an overwhelming likelihood that Volkanovski takes this one. And to be quite honest, I've won money on 2 separate occasions betting on Alexander Volkanovski against the Hawaiian. So yeah, I favor Alexander Volkanovski. Why wouldn't I? It's entirely possible that Max Holloway continues his legendary ascension and hits yet another level. We don't know that he's plateaued, and he's looked great his last couple fights. He's right smack in the prime of his career with some of the most prolific experience ever tabulated inside the octagon. And I don't think that's crazy. That's why the gap here in the odds is off-putting for me. After all, Max did show with some time to recalibrate that he was able to find chinks in Volkanovski's armor. Instead of viewing it as 8 out of 10 rounds won by Volkanovski, we should consider the adaptability of a tenured fighter who has seen it all like Max Holloway. To me, I think that this is a 55-45 fight, but opposite of the beta 1 equation. I think Volkanovski is 55% likely to win to the 45% likelihood of Max Holloway. So while I think the most likely outcome is Alexander Volkanovski by decision, you can only get that at plus 115 right now, whereas Max Holloway, at my judgment of a 45% likelihood of victory, is currently an aggregate underdog of plus 166. So just betting Max outright gets you better odds than the most likely outcome specific bet on Alexander Volkanovski. And that's where I stand. The most likely outcome is Volkanovski by decision. But considering the range of outcomes and the odds that we're being given, I like a bet on Max Holloway outright. It might not be sexy, but I'm taking a probabilistic approach here.
Yo, yeah.
The final bout on Tim Talk 276 is the main event of the evening, and I promise you, Scraptitude faithful, I will not be as indecisive as I was for the co-main event of UFC 276. Here we have a lopsided odds differential with Israel Adesanya as an aggregate favorite of minus 489 to the plus 360 of Jared Cannonier. In terms of percentages, that is an 83% likelihood for Adesanya to the 21.7% likelihood of Cannonier. The beta 1 equation agrees, wow, look at that, and believes that Adesanya is a 77% likelihood of victory to the 23% likelihood of Jared Cannonier. So similarly skewed odds between the two, and really, I don't think that we can miss on this one. There isn't a statistical category where Cannonier outpaces Adesanya. Adesanya has a longer reach. Adesanya has more career mixed martial arts fights, a better career win rate, a better UFC win rate. He's never lost by finish compared to the 10% loss by finish rate of Cannonier. Adesanya outstrikes his opponents by more significant strikes per round. He also knocks down his opponents at a higher rate with a 1.48 K to D ratio. That's 1.48 knockdowns per 100 significant strikes landed to the 1.01 knockdowns per 100 significant strikes landed for Jared Cannonier. But it goes even a little bit further than that. Adesanya never knocked down in his entire mixed martial arts career, but Cannonier actually absorbs more knockdowns per 100 significant strikes absorbed than he doles out for every 100 significant strikes landed. That spells bad news against a striker as accurate, as prolific as Israel Adesanya. From my perspective, there's a dearth of compelling competition in this middleweight division. Adesanya's lapped the crew, Robert Whittaker, Marvin Vettori, back of the line, baby. And up steps Jared Cannonier, a stay busy fight just to keep the money flowing for the kingpin of this division. And no disrespect to Cannonier, I mean, he is ferocious, he is skillful in some respects, but the two division flunky at 38 years old with his slow feet and his slow hands amounts to little more than knockout fodder in a fight where he is so drastically overmatched. I didn't have to think twice about this one. I'm betting Israel Adesanya to take this one by TKO, which you can notch for plus 150 on DraftKings. However, if you're higher on Jared Cannonier than me, I'd recommend betting the under 4.5 on my bookie, which you can lock in at minus 115. To me, that is an absolute can't-miss bet that protects you from any Cannonier-related volatility. Because let's be real, Adesanya, with the gaps that he's going to have available to him, would have to be ultra-conservative for this one to go to a decision. Meanwhile, if Cannonier has any hope of victory, he's going to have to use this time to make things fair, and he's going to have to get it done inside the distance. There is no way he's going to outpoint a crafty striker, a disciplined fighter like Israel Adesanya. Not going to happen. He's going to need to take risks, and that's going to open up the area for exploitation. Israel Adesanya, no doubt about it, knocking Jared Cannonier out at plus 150. Book it.
Yo, yeah.
I'd like to extend a final thank you to everybody that tunes into this podcast. If you have the opportunity, please take the time to share with other like-minded people. I believe we're generating a good product here. And the beauty of sticking with us is I guarantee you, I'm only going to get better. We're only going to get better. These stats, they are the core of our brand. So please take the time to subscribe, rate, and review this program. Give us the retweets. All of that, we're dependent largely on word of mouth marketing. This is a humble brand, but we have a lot of aspirations here. So help us out. And if we win you a few dollars, I'm not asking for you to give me a cut. I don't have a tip jar. Just shout us out. Anyways, our socials are in the bio. Get at us there. Hit me up anytime. Slide in the DMs. I'm always down to talk some fights. But anyways, y'all, until next time.